everybody, and welcome to Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. My name is Jay.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Michael Phelps.
And welcome to the show. How's it going, Jack?
Good. And did you win the Did you win the shark? Did you defeat the shark, Jack?
I won the shark race. It was a no contest.
Awesome.
But Jack, that's what you go with. There's so many great things from this episode, and you go with a Michael Phelps joke.
Well, I went with Michael Phelps because you got Theon in the water.
Yeah. Okay.
Again, and it's a stretch. It's a bit of a stretch Armstrong there.
You know, and the shark's going to swim between. I'm sorry, I'm after meat.
Yeah, and he's already lost so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that a bad one?
Not great.
All right. Well, you try. I'm on medication, so excuse me.
Yeah. For those not aware, Jack's on some muscle relaxers or whatever because he pulled his back walking. And
no, it's my sciatic nerve. It was a bad pass from my son.
So who do you blame, the son or the father that taught him to throw? So anyhow,
in fact, I did turn to. Actually, you were throwing great.
Exactly. I had better than the Clanton's throws. Come on,
could catch to save your life.
I still caught. That's I have a quarterback. Quarterbacks don't have to catch.
That's what I turned because you threw to Colleen. She dropped it. I turned to Aaron, my nephew, your cousin, said, I said, Zach has no hope.
Actually, Zach has a pretty good arm. But anyway, that's not Game of Thrones talk.
Get a cat.
We are here to talk about this episode. Sorry, we are late. We were busy at Comic-Con, had another great Comic-Con, thanks to all our friends.
Comic-Con!
And we actually did a Game of Thrones viewing party in Colleen, Zach, and I's hotel room. Thanks, Jim, for getting it all set up on our TV so we could watch the East Coast feed on West Coast time. So,
Why did it freeze on it would freeze like when it got to the really good part?
Because we had hotel internet, and it's Comic-Con, so you had a billion people using it.
Yeah, because I mean, it always works really well on Tuesday. Yeah, the internet. Down there, and then on Wednesday it's just slammed, and you might as well just use your data.
Yep. Either way, a fantastic episode to watch. But it's kind of had mixed reviews post episode. I'm sure we'll dig into some different things when we talk about it today.
It was minus some redhead singers, so that's what killed the episode.
Lots of different styles of editing that they hadn't done before, and there's a lot of callbacks, which I don't know if a lot of people picked up on to season one and some other little tidbits of echoing lines or little scenes, and it was...
Nick, we didn't talk about this before, but do you want to discuss the echoing stuff in the What Happens in the Book Stays in the Book, since it's kind of referential?
I've got it written in my notes as it happens.
Okay, that's fine, Okay. I don't want to disturb the flow of your notes, Nick.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and go where is it?
But I got to cross it off here.
Before we get into any of our discussion, I want to thank the people that make this show possible. Our patrons over at patreon.com/JayandJack. We have over 150 some odd patrons that contribute to the show. This is a listener supported show. Without our listeners contributing whatever they can from a dollar on up, we would not be able to make all of our shows, including this one, Game of Thrones, with Jay, Jack, and Nick. So thank you for all those who support it. But a very easy way you can support this show, if maybe you don't have extra money to spend each month to support this podcast, and that's okay, is just to tell your friends. If you enjoy what we do when we discuss Game of Thrones, share with your friends and family, hey, check out Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. It's a good show. And if you don't like it, just don't say anything. Just send Jack an email at crackpotjack, whatever your email is, at gmail.com.
You can send a lost podcast at gmail.com. I'll get it.
Or you could just be Theon, Reek, just jump ship.
Just avoid conflict. But Jack is on muscle relaxers right now, so it's probably a good time to send in some negative thoughts.
Yeah, because I'll read it, man.
So you have some stuff in common with Grey Worm. Just relaxed.
Just nothing there, man. Oh,
boy. Well, he is married. So let's jump into our Game of Thrones recap. Nick, take it away.
All right. So we open up with a thunderstorm on Dragonstone with Danny. And they're making comparisons of, this is what it was just like when you were born. But Danny, to me, like, seemed already, like, fidgety. Like, she's ready to conquer. Like, she was bored already of being there. Because she's like, this doesn't feel like home to me. But I guess that makes sense, considering she grew up mostly in Essos.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, King's Landing's not going to feel like home to her either.
Exactly. I don't know. I guess it's kind of like one of those things where, like, if you know, if you had, you've always wanted to go to Paris your entire life, and all of a sudden you get there and you're like, oh, it's not what I thought it would be. I guess she's kind of having that buyer's remorse kind of thing, or I don't know.
Yeah, I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was a great scene, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I liked the episode. I don't really fault it for anything. I thought it was good. I mean, it's a bit fast because, I mean, when you think about it, we have five more episodes left. And so there some things that, you know, it's like with things we've always discussed. You know, they no longer show really journey scenes anymore. It's just like, oh, like, I need to go from Winterfell to Dragonstone. I'll be there in the next episode.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I think we talked about it before, but you think it's because of the cost of doing it?
Well, that there's only so many episodes left, so they don't have time, really.
And do we need to see it?
No, you don't have to.
You don't, but I will say, like, Tyrion in this scene referenced his travels with Jon Snow, and that was a lot of, you know, character development, story building between the two of them as they traveled to the Great Wall, which was, what, over the course of at least an episode or two in season one, right?
Right, exactly.
But they were still developing characters back then, so I think this is season seven. We know their characters. We know most of the main characters we know.
That's
but I just thought the scene with the way she was grilling him and the way Tyrion was trying to protect him, I thought this was a fantastic scene.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But anyway, to keep us on point, so like she looks down at the battle map of Westeros, and she kind of optimistically goes, not so many lions. Like, kind of like, oh, there's not such a big army that we have to defeat. And then Varys kind of comes in and says, well, Cersei has many enemies. Even before your arrival, they plotted against her. And Danny, it triggers this memory for Danny in our first callback of season one. And she echoes the same line word for word of, you know, they call out for their true queen, the people, you know, like, and they drink secret toast to my health. And you can see Varys kind of going like, oh, she's heard this BS before, you know. And that's where, you know, the tone of the scene kind of changes, or maybe she just needed someone to attack, you know, because that's what she does. She's a conqueror. So she immediately just turns her eyes to Varys and starts, you know, laying into him like, you know, you served many kings, you know, you served my grandfather and you served the usurper, and you didn't serve him very long. And I kind of wanted him to go, well, I served him for like 10 years. That's a long time. But then it's like, you kind of want to have this moment of Varys, even though Varys is the way he is. You kind of want to go like, "What? Well, I just brought you two armies, you know?" And like, I've been riding I rode across the Narrow Sea with you, and you're just now bringing this stuff up. Like, come on.
I see both sides. Like, I see Varys' side of this, but I also see her side. It's like, it's fair for her to ask of loyalty, but at the same time, asking of loyalty, like, they're just going to say yes. So how can you really tell if they're telling, you know, if they're really being loyal?
I did think he handled it really well, though.
Oh, he did. Absolutely.
He didn't crack. I mean, most people have been sweating bullets, and
this is Varys.
I know, but she has three dragons. I mean,
you
could feed me the dragons if you want.
I mean, she effectively got him to admit that he was behind the plot to kill her when she was, you know, in season one.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, instead of running or accepting his fate, he successfully defended himself. You know, basically saying, you know, if you want incompetence, you know, well, basically incompetence shouldn't be rewarded with blind loyalty. If you want blind loyalty, I'm not your man.
Yeah.
And basically he goes, as long as I have eyes, I'll use them, which is great. Cause you know, he goes, I serve the people, but don't worry about that. Cause I choose you. So he really sells himself in the fact that like, yes, you know, I always serve the people, but right now you're the best thing for us.
Yep.
And you know, Danny's accepts it, which is great, you know, because she does. She needs allies like him and Tyrion who think, not just yes men. And then she does a smart thing in the fact that she says, okay, whenever you think I'm no longer representing the people, tell me. You know, don't plot against me. And he was like, yes, I'll do that. And that's such a, that's a refreshing thing, I think, to him and anyone who's a smart ruler, is that, yes, I'm a human being. I make mistakes.
Yeah.
But then in a kind of a joking way, she almost kind of references the Mad King, you know, and like, but if you betray me, I'll burn you alive. Yeah. Cause that's what he would do. And then comes strutting in, Melisandre rolls up into Dragonstone and pitches her concepts about the Lord of Light. And Barry kind of says, well, you didn't do Stannis that well, you know.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Or his daughter.
And then we kind of get into I'll go ahead and talk about this now, but that's actually something I'm interested in, is that what are we going to see most likely next episode when John rolls up in Dragonstone and he sees her? You know, he's already told her. I know his stipulations were, if you return to the north, I'll kill you.
Yeah.
But it's like the fact that it's like, I just banished you and here you are.
So well, it's like, Khaleesi, but your rules, you can't kill
Khaleesi has faith in her, and he can't do anything because she's the queen.
Yeah, but what if he tells her? Because Dany is usually pretty smart about taking advice to people. And if he tells that to her, like she killed an innocent little girl, Dany is not really that, you know, she's a more apathetic.
You think they brought her to this scene just to kill her in the next episode?
I don't think so. I would think she would survive the series, but you never know. But you know,
she did give Jon Snow a second chance at life.
That's true.
I wouldn't be you.
Which
wouldn't
he
be
didn't
here
ask
me.
For, in all fairness.
Yeah, but she could do the whole card. You wouldn't be here if it weren't for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, on to the more controversial kind of line, because like I said, we're not with the books anymore, and I thought this was a little too convenient, and the fact that he's talking about the prince that was promised, which is everyone's assumed was John, and then Missandei interrupts, says, oh, well, the translation is actually the prince or the princess that was promised. And it's almost like you're just beating us over the head with this. Oh, my God, Dany and Jon are the two that are promised. You know, and it's like, I mean, I still like it, but it's just, okay.
but that's where I do agree with some of the criticism. It's a little, it's not as subtle and like as George R. R. Martin's text was. Or maybe even some of the other shows, like Lindelof, like how he does his shows. There's no spoon feeding. You have to kind of connect the dots.
Right. And then the fact that, like, they kind of focused on that, and then they totally gloss over the fact that Melisandre's like, oh, but Jon Snow united the North against the terrible zombie army that's attacking.
Yeah.
And then Dany doesn't even follow up with a question of, like, wait, what? There's an army of the dead? Like,
But she's like, let him tell you what he's seen.
Yeah, like, okay.
She's got a lot on her mind. Come on, she can't remember everything.
Zombie army. I think it would come up. Like, what? But it's still.
Maybe if she had Facebook or something, she could keep up on it because her friends would be posting it. I don't know.
Look, they got ravens, and those ravens are super fast. They literally get there in minutes of an episode.
Faster than a tweet in some cases.
Well, it's Sam's raven was a little slower than.
It is true,
but it got there in perfect editing fashion of exactly when Jon Snow needed it to make a decision.
So the raven was there for the dramatic scene. He goes, all right, I'm gonna wait.
Yeah,
I'm gonna sit on this tree out here and wait,
mm-hmm.
and for the big moment.
Wait. Sansa and John are arguing about something. It's not relevant to my note just yet. I'll wait.
That Emmy is eluding me. If I come in at the right moment, the Emmy is mine.
But Tyrion, though, like, does stand up for John and says, "I trust John. He was a good guy. He's a good man. You should invite him because he'd be a powerful ally with us." Because she already has, you know, she has Dorne, she has the Reach, she has the Iron Islands.
For now.
At the time. And you know, it's like the North would be great because it basically would shore up everything if she had the North, because then all you have to worry about is basically the Lannisters. But Dani kind of oversteps her bounds, at least. I mean, not her bounds. She just kind of shows her arrogance, though, and is like, oh, yeah, invite him down so he can bend the knee, which I was like, ooh, girl, you just got here like a week ago. You know, like,
let dragons be dragons, Nick. Gosh.
Yeah.
Does Jon Snow, does he bend the knee? Will he bend the knee?
No, this is what I think. I think Jon will bend the knee, but it won't be for that reason.
What will it be?
Well, what
stay
why
tuned
other
for Nick's crackpot theory of the week. You know.
Okay. Well, that's just kind of like, it's kind of a given. Like, oh, he'll bend the knee.
See, because he thinks she's hot?
Well,
it's his sister or aunt, actually.
He didn't know that yet.
He doesn't know. He hasn't done 23andMe.
Anyway.
Okay.
Maybe Tyrion talks him into doing it.
Maybe. But, I mean, she did say, well, I mean, if you want to keep this towards the predictions, we can. But it's kind of already out there. But you see that in, like, last season where she's talking with, I forget his name at the time, but, you know, her lover who she leaves in Essos. She's like, you know, alliances must be made, you know, once I get there.
Okay. So you think to marry each other.
Yeah. Why else would a man, you know, he's going to bend his knee for marriage,
okay.
But not.
Oh.
Okay.
That's what I'm guessing.
And when does someone say, okay, wait, this can't happen? Oh, wait, we already had the...
Well,
who
knows? Nobody. I mean, Ned's dead, so who... I guess,
well,
Bran.
No, Bran can figure it out.
What about Littlefinger?
The other person who knows is... why am I forgetting his name? It's the girl who is pulling Bran right now. Her father knows.
Okay.
Her father knows, because he's the other guy who survived the Tower of Joy with Ed.
Littlefinger couldn't figure put two and two together?
And that's what I'm going to get to later during the scenes, is that Littlefinger probably knows as well.
No.
So Littlefinger might know, but I'll get to that later.
Well, I mean, we'll discuss it later.
Okay. And then it moves on to...
You have to know everything else, so...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, him and the spider, Varys, they always know everything. And, you know, Varys used children to get all of his information. We don't know how Littlefinger gets his information. We had brothels, and he always overheard things. So it's possible. We'll see. But moving on to a really quick scene, cut back to Jon and Sansa. We have Jon reading a letter who, like I said, those ravens are really quick. They don't get enough credit for how fast they can move across continents. We have our second throwback. That proved that Tyrion wrote the letter saying, you know, all dwarves are bastards in the eyes of the father, which is what Tyrion said to Jon in Castle Black, I think in episode one. Not Castle Black, Winterfell in episode one, when Jon's like, you don't know what it's like to be a bastard. He goes, of course I do, you know.
Yeah, I know
that. And this is what we also see while they're reading this letter. We see Tyrion's first act of undermining Dany, which I thought was really interesting because there's no mention of him bending a knee. It's more of a personal letter between Tyrion and Jon of saying, you know, come on down, have a few laughs.
It's true.
And
was that just being deceitful to Jon Snow?
It's what's being deceitful to both. Because think about it. I mean, Jon was already weary about going to go anyway. And if it would have been another letter the same way Cersei sent it to him of like, come and show your loyalty, he probably would have been like, whatever, lady.
Well, maybe that's why he did it. It wasn't maybe so deceitful as it was strategic. He gets Jon Snow there and say, look, right, she's going to ask you to bend the knee. Just do it. That's what we need to get going. You know, it doesn't mean anything.
Uh-huh.
Just do it. Doesn't mean anything.
But I mean, like you just said, Nick, if he put in there, you're going to have to bend the knee to Khaleesi. He's going to go, I'm not going there.
Yeah,
it's already a risk. So I think it was from a strategic standpoint. I think it was a good move by Tyrion.
But what if he arrives though, and Tyrion doesn't get to say this to him, and Dany's
you know, I had that in
could
there.
Backfire
I know
big time.
Those ravens sometimes edit as they're going. It's not my fault.
Oh, that tweet got sent. That was the wrong tweet.
Oh yeah, it should have been deleted. My bad. You know you can't edit, so I'm sorry. Anyway,
but you know, like I said, Jon wasn't sure about getting involved, and but Davos kind of brings a little levity to the scene, Because he's like, well, White Walkers can be killed with fire. What breathes fire? You know, yeah. And it makes total sense. It's like, yeah, we need, you know, because he's thinking big picture, like we need dragons to kill the White Walkers because they don't know. Well, yeah, they don't know yet about the dragon glass that Sam has discovered.
Yep.
And then moving on to King's Landing in the next scene, you have Cersei lecturing Randall Tarly, which is kind of weird. Like, why would you lecture a guy who is pretty much your only ally? But he's there with Sam's brother, Dickon, which is an interesting name, about...
Appropriate.
Yeah.
Is that a new kind of glue for that problem?
Something Grey Worm needs, yeah. and how, you know, he needs to betray Olenna Tyrell, the Tyrells, to help her fight Daenerys. And she kind of, you know, plays to his prejudices, you know, like this is a foreign army. This is, you know, she brought foreigners here to destroy us and she's not even from here. I'm your true queen. And the thing is that the things that Cersei, which she has no idea of actually knowing these things. So you would kind of think, oh, she's full of it. The atrocities that Cersei is saying, like mass crucifixions, feeding political enemies to her dragons. Dany's actually did this. So from Cersei's argument, you can make her out to be a monster if you look at it from that, you know, point of view.
Yeah.
Certain point of view.
Yeah.
Well, as Obi-Wan said, you know, it's all about a certain point of view.
Right. But then, you know, Randall kind of is just standing there and he goes, okay, but how do you plan on stopping three dragons? And they're like, oh, cut to him leaving. They don't, you know, other than just like, oh, it's being worked out. Right. Whatever. Jaime follows him outside and pitches him a much better deal. Of like, I want you to be my second in command. When the war is over, you can be the warden of the South. So basically, he'll be the power. He'll be the new Tyrells. You know, like he'll own the entire South, which Randall really seems to like. But of course, he throws in a nice burn there just to kind of give the Lannisters a nice little. He goes, you know, we don't threaten to murder our own children. Oh, well, because, you know, because the Tarleys are a house of honor, even though he kicked his own son out. We don't threaten to murder their children, and we don't stab our rivals in the back, and we don't cut their throats at weddings. So it's like,
ooh, sick burn,
sick burn. But yeah, I'm pretty sure he'll do it because you know he's power talks. He's yeah, but like it's funny how you know a dad like that can have a kid like Sam. You know, it's just what?
Yeah. We'll just ask Jack.
I can totally. Can't you see Randall Tarly just constantly going like, Sam, why can't you throw or catch a baseball?
Oh, no, I pulled my back because you threw it in the wrong place.
Yeah, like I'm that cruel.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it's funny. That dinner scene just reminded me of dinner at my parents' house. So,
hey, when Zach's there, we don't even acknowledge you, do we?
Exactly.
So stop complaining. Well, I think Sam gets his kindness from his mom.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
I mean, obviously, I mean, just.
But speaking of Sam, the next scene that cuts to the Citadel, where Archmaester Marwyn is explaining to Jorah that he has about 10 to 20 years left before the grayscale kills him, and that he'll go nuts in about 6 months, which sucks for Jorah.
So you got that. So he's got that going for him.
He got that going. Yeah, doesn't have the best bedside manner, that's for sure. but you know, and then he tops it with, you should have cut your arm off. Like, what's wrong with you? But Sam does try.
Isn't that the correct? That's how you stop it, right?
Right. Well, you should have. Yeah. As soon as he knew he was touched, he should have just cut his arm off. I mean, they proved that in World War Z, and you know, everything in movies is true.
I bet the scene coming up later in the episode, he would have wished he cut his arm off.
Oh yes, yes. Nothing like a nipple removal. But Sam does try to help, and he refers to Shireen Baratheon. You know, like, oh, she was cured as a baby, and of course Marwyn just shuts him down. You know, it's like, no, that's too advanced. He's gone. You know,
are you a doctor?
Yeah, you're not. I know everything. I read books. So do I, sir. But
and I steal books.
Yes. But, you know, he gives Jorah one day to contemplate suicide by his sword, or he's going to be shipped off to Valyria to die with the rest of the stone men. So, not good.
Well, if he goes there, he could be leader of the stone men.
Yeah, but he's mine. Good.
So it's a new spinoff series.
Yeah.
Jorah, leader of the stone men.
Well, they already have the theme song, you know, like we sang. I turned
to stone.
Stone.
When you were around, I turned to stone.
Then we cut another quick back to King's Landing, where Cersei and Qyburn are taking a stroll through the dungeons of the Red Keep, where all the collections of the dragon skulls are there. And this did not seem that convincing to me, because it's like, okay, wait a minute. You've had fine art, you know, blacksmiths working months to create a crossbow, and you're shooting at a fixed target.
Yeah, exactly.
At a 300-year-old skull.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't think that's really going to work.
It can't move.
Yeah, it can't move, yeah.
Well, if they can somehow lure the dragons in, just get some good little farm
boys. But even then, all the dragons do is just move its head.
Well, you just bring little farm boys out there.
I mean, I guess you just have to hit it somewhere. It would probably do enough damage. But that was my thought, too. It's just like, well, it's a moving target. Like, and you can't, you probably can't. It's a big crossbow. You can't move it easily.
Yeah. I mean, if you had like a bunch of these things, maybe you might hit him once. But if you only have the one, I think the dragon's going to kind of defeat you pretty easily.
Now, don't you think that the dragons will be defeated?
I think that I would bet that I think we'll lose at least two of them. There might be one surviving at the end of the series, but
that would have to put it on a level playing field.
Yeah.
I would think.
I think for a lasting peace or for a democracy possibly or something, I don't know how it's going to end. Like, you know, the dragons need to be removed because they're just too much of a threat for people just to kill fields of soldiers or innocent people.
The War of Roses, how did that end?
The War of Roses ended in a marriage between the houses. Oh, shocker.
did we get to the more democratized version of the British Parliament or no?
Well, no, it happened a few hundred years later.
Okay.
But, because like, I forget which side. I mean, I didn't study English history a lot, but basically I think it was the Lancasters ended up winning, I think. And then they married the oldest daughter. And then they were happy for like that 20 years. And then there was supposedly this escaped son of the other half that was claimed to be king that was in France. And they came back. And then this is another, it was basically two sections of the war. But in the end, it all worked out. We think.
Moving
on.
Okay. So back on Dragonstone, in our second war council, now with the dream team. We got everybody there. Yara wants to take King's Landing right now. But Tyrion claims, you know, that will cost thousands of lives because dragons will be killing everybody. And this ensues a brief showdown between Tyrion and Ilaria Sand. Over her, you know, murdering basically his niece in cold blood last season when she kissed her and she bled in front of her, in front of Jaime. But this, and then we get the third throwback of the episode with when Daenerys steps in and says, you know, I'm not here to be Queen of the Ashes. We're not going to attack the King's Landing, because this is basically what Varys told the Queen of Thorns, I think in season 3. Or 4, about Littlefinger, is that, you know, he would watch the whole world burn if he could be King of the Ashes, you know. But, you know, so then you get a little bit of a silence, and then Tyrion and Dany propose their plan, which is, we're not going to send the Unsullied and Dothraki into King's Landing, because this will play into Cersei's hands of saying, look, these foreigners are here to invade us. So instead, it needs to be done by Westerosi. So we're going to lay a siege to to King's Landing and basically starve them out into submission while the Unsullied attack Casterly Rock from the west because that's because the Lannisters are the true power in Westeros because they have all the gold.
Which I love that was there as like a pseudo response to Cersei's machinations. So I thought that was neat. Mm-hmm.
But is it a mistake though?
Well, we found out later it was.
Yeah. I mean you go with your strength.
Yeah.
I mean I understand the strategy behind it.
But
if the first wave fails, you're going to have to send those guys in anyway.
It's a sound plan. I mean, it was a good plan because like Cersei does not have a large army. She has the Lannister army, which has been at war this entire show.
Yeah. Well, I get it. I'm just saying, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. But, the meeting's adjourned. They all agree. And we have our fourth throwback, which is kind of a throwback, but not. It's more subtle. With the Queen of Thorns, Tyrell, talking to Dany and giving her advice. And her advice is don't always listen to them. They're smart, but be a dragon. Be yourself. But that's what her brother Varys always said was that, I am a dragon. It didn't really work out so well for him.
Well, he got his crown.
He did. He did win his crown. And so still on Dragonstone, we get the Missandei sneaks into Grey Room's worm, and you can cue the music of, tell me something good.
Tell me something good.
It would have been a good time for a Viagra commercial or something like that, maybe.
But she sneaks in with a dress that is conveniently laces up the front, so props to her. Grey Worm tells her that he's scared because he's been ordered to leave, with them to invade Castor Lock, so they're going to be split up, and he's scared because she is his weakness. Which I don't really recommend that line to all the bachelors out there, but it worked for him.
I thought he knew his audience. I thought it was a good, you complete me speech.
Mm-hmm. You're my weakness. I was so strong before I met you, and now I'm weak.
I'm weak. You've destroyed me. Yeah. I mean, in a good way. what I saw in the internet world, that a lot of people didn't like this scene. They said it went on too long.
Yeah, that's what they thought, because there was so much plot and so much good things happening. They felt like, okay, we see.
It was too long because I had my 3-year-old son in the room, and it was hard to distract him enough to.
Because there were nipples.
It's not Game of Thrones that unnecessarily nudity.
Yeah.
Now, was the scene setting us up for Greyjoy to be killed?
Grey Worm. Yeah, that's what I think too. It's kind of like, okay, we better bang real quick before you die next episode. So.
Well, I think they're just going to make it. They like to a death to make us care about it.
If
Grey Worm would have got killed, I like Grey Worm, but now he's showing his softer side. He's obviously showing his love.
But we cared about Grey Worm dying the last time he almost died.
It's like, okay, he's kind of. I think they're going to kill him off. That's my crackpot theory.
But think about it. He was on that fleet. He's in that fleet that was attacked at the end of the episode.
Was he in that one? Because I thought that one was going to strangle.
Well, they're going down the Dorne, but. I mean, maybe they're not. I assume that.
I thought that was just the Dornish and whatchamacallit people.
Well, that's basically her fleet. Yeah. I mean, it's not her entire fleet, but it makes sense to send just the them down and then go around to Casterly Rock.
Because I thought it was the Unsullied and the Dothraki that are going to Casterly Rock. They're going on a separate journey. And then the Dornish and the were going the other way. That's what I thought.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. Okay, I'm wrong. Sorry, everybody out there. let's say. So they get it on. Grey Worm gives her the Lord's Kiss, which in the books means going down. Because what else is he going to do?
There's different things. I happened to read an article today about how this could have worked, and there's situations where eunuchs didn't have all of their stuff removed, just the things that give them testosterone. So there's other things. It's possible The toughest part would be him wanting to do it at all without the testosterone, but it's still happened in ancient times when eunuchs were more common.
Okay.
I guess apparently, like, royal women loved eunuchs because they were more emotional and didn't want to have sex all the time, but they could still have sex if they had their member, but, you know, only if the women wanted it. So it was a very common thing for noble women to have eunuch lovers on the side. That, and they couldn't get pregnant.
So stay tuned to our eunuch-centric episode.
Not that anybody cared about that listening at home.
That's so interesting. Tell us more. So back at the Citadel, Maester Marwyn and Sam are discussing book writings and titles, and he's telling Sam, like, we're here to write the histories of, you know, of the world, Sam. And this has led me, I believe this for a while anyway, but like that Sam is probably writing the Song of Ice and Fire. You know, like this is probably all this entire time, this has probably been Sam writing this story, because that's why the opening credits have the glowing orb, you know, and then the orbs in the thing. And it just makes sense, because like he even says that, like, you know, it should be a bit more poetic title. And, you know, what's more poetic than, you know, the Song of Ice and Fire? It's, it's really poetic. And then Sam kind of asks for a minute. He goes, you have a minute. Go ahead. And then so Sam says, I may have discovered another procedure for Jorah. But as he starts to talk about it, Maester Marwyn says, I'm familiar with that. Do you know how that guy died? He died by grayscale. So it's like oh, okay. But he persists. You know, it cuts to Jorah writing a letter to Daenerys, a love letter. And if you guys don't know it, and somebody, I'll read it for some of you guys who don't know. It says, I came to the Citadel and last hope that the maesters could treat me as you ordered. I should try to do it in his voice, but I can't do his voice, you know, even with all their arts. You know, I am beyond any cure.
Khaleesi.
But Khaleesi. You know, I am beyond any cure but the grave. I've had a longer life than deserved, and I only wished I could have lived to see the world you're going to build, standing by your side. I have loved you since the moment I met you, and now I'm rock hard. no. He didn't say that last little bit. But, you know, luckily or not so luckily, Sam is now practicing experimental medicine, so he comes into Jorah's room and they swig a little bit of rum before deciding how best to violently rip off Jorah's nipple. And
this was a tough scene to watch.
I just kind of kept thinking the whole time, hopefully the grayscale didn't spread south, because I don't want to see that scene.
Yeah, that was a rough. That was a rough scene, because it had like all the pus and the ooze all coming out, and oh, it was rough.
That was the scene where I said, "Okay, Zach, you need to turn your face."
Hiding him for that too. But at that point, I was like, you know what? Maybe death is better at that point. His whole body almost.
Oh yeah, his whole like neck and left side of his body was, and you kind of wondered. That's what I kept thinking. It's like, oh, I wonder how far it goes down, because it's like, oh, he might be joining Grey Worm. I don't know. But I thought it was a really clever editing, though, because it you're seeing all this pus, and then all of a sudden you just see another finger go in, and you think, oh, I don't need to see that, and then you're fooled into going, oh, it's a pie.
Yeah,
it's lunch.
They've been this season. If it has a theme, it's putting really gross things with food.
Yeah, exactly.
But we're at Arya's favorite road pub, where she's eating a pie. And
I did have a question. Do you think,
go ahead.
Even if it's successful, does Sam get in trouble?
I don't think it'll be successful.
Okay,
really, you don't think it'll be successful?
No, I think
why do it if it's not going to be successful? You know.
Because I think this is it's like what the maester said. This might even be a maester's kind of aha moment. whereas in I Told You So. Because I think that it's a failed experiment by Sam, because for anyone out there who didn't, there's a in episode one, when Sam is scrolling through the book, if you freeze frame it in the right, you can't read the whole thing. But it does say the cure for, and you can't see that part, and they say is dragon glass. So you kind of assume that the cure for grayscale is dragon glass. Mm-hmm. And this method might slow it down, but until they find the mountain of dragon glass underneath Dragonstone, I don't think Jor will be cured.
So even so let's just say he is cured. Does Sam get in trouble?
No, I don't think he would get in trouble for trying to help him.
Well, he was told to let it go.
That's true. I guess they were just trying to prevent Sam from getting grayscale. But
I mean, he's already stolen a book. He's doing, I mean, some couple books and.
So, don't tell me what I can't do. No, it's a good question. That's a tune in next week and find out.
I guess we will.
But kudos to you. That was your theory last week.
It was.
So, kudos to you, sir.
Way to go, Nick.
Yeah, I'm one for one on that one. I didn't expect it to happen so soon, but then again, we only have 7 episodes. So I was like, okay.
But you could be right in that it doesn't work this time until they get the dragon glass.
We'll see. I just can't see it working. Like I said, we have to have stuff for Sam to do for this season, and I can't see it working this first attempt. I think he'll probably be cured at the end of this season, and or some part. And I actually have a theory on a little bit of that too. So we'll see.
Another theory.
Yeah. So we cut to Arya eating her pie, and she's kind of just solemnly looking at nothing, listening to other people talk, and then all of a sudden. There's Hot Pie!
Hot Pie!
Hot Pie, he's alive!
Yeah. And he's ever delightful as he always is, and he gives Arya more free pie, and he kind of starts being like anybody would, like, so what's happened to you? And it kind of ignores him, just kind of changes the subject, which I thought was odd. Like, why not tell him he's your friend?
Yeah, but, like, but, I also see it's just like, it's a long story, what I want to, like, you know.
Not that he would turn on her, but she doesn't know.
Yeah.
The less people that know the plan, the better.
But she tells him, well, she didn't tell him the full plan, but yeah. I mean, he knows that she's Arya Stark. So it's like, well, you know, he's kept that secret the whole time.
Yeah, I don't think he would turn. I just think it's more.
I'm saying from her standpoint, she's been burned a few times, so why would you? I wouldn't tell anybody.
Mm-hmm. But she just, you know, but she does answer, though, that. I'm going to go to King's Landing, which Hot Pie finds odd because he's like, I thought you would have gone home, you know, to see your family. And she's like, what are you talking about? And he's like, well, John came down from the wall and fought the Battle of the Bastards. And now he's the Lord of the North.
Which,
what? Well, yeah. Scooby-Doo. So Arya shockingly decides to abandon her mission and turns north and starts to ride home.
I'm coming home.
Cut to Winterfell, where, like we said, that raven finally got off its perch and it got to John. John just received a letter from Sam telling him about the dragon glass that's buried on Dragonstone. So naturally, now John has to go to Dragonstone.
Exactly.
He pulls together all the lords, council, and everything out. He actually faces a lot of pushback here. None of the lords of the North, even our fan favorite. Lady Mormont doesn't want him to go, and Sansa as well. You know, it's like no. Like,
well, what if he is killed? That puts a big, that's a huge mistake if he goes there and dies.
Oh, exactly. Because I mean, I don't blame him. I mean, they've been fooled 3 times now. I mean, it was their grandfather was burned by the Mad King. Ned Stark lost his head, and Robb died. So it's like, wow, we've lost 3 in a row going south. Like, don't do it.
And we just, like I said, and he has everyone behind him now.
Right. So, and it's kind of foolhardy for him to go. He can send anyone to do it. He could send Sansa, but it'd probably make more. But Sansa reminds him of this, how we've lost everyone from that. And but you know, she does happen to warm to the idea as soon as he says, "Oh, I'm leaving you in charge." She's like, "Oh, okay, I'll shut up now."
In charge, power.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Thanks. But for our fifth throwback, I forget who says it. Maybe it is Sansa. Sansa says, you know, there must always be a Stark in Winterfell, you know, because that's just what Catelyn said. And it makes sense because that's, you know, people rally behind the Starks and there needs to be one. And that's when he tells her, like, well, I'm leaving you in charge. But what's interesting to me about this scene is not really any of this. What I liked about it, kind of going with what you're saying, Jack, about Littlefinger, is that Lord Royce stands up and says, a Targaryen cannot be trusted. And it cuts to Littlefinger's face, who he kind of smirks.
Right.
Like, So it's like, well, what would happen to the Lords of the North if they found out that Jon might be a Targaryen?
Mm-hmm.
And this also is a kind of a throwback as well to season 5 when Littlefinger and Sansa are down in the crypts. And Littlefinger does the same facial expression. He winces when Sansa says, and then he kidnapped her and raped her, talking about her aunt Lyanna and right. The Targaryens. And so that's what kind of makes you think that maybe Littlefinger might know who Jon Snow really is. But he's keeping this information to himself. And to what ends, we have yet to see. But then Littlefinger makes a really weird decision, and which I thought was odd. He sneaks into the crypts when John's having a quiet moment with his uncle, dad. We'll find out. And he slides up to tell John about how he always loved his mother, and now he's in love with his sister. Which is like not exactly the best.
Not the best play, man. Not the best play.
I couldn't figure out why he was doing that.
Yeah.
Unless it was just to get in John's head.
That would be my thing. Get in his head or to kind of see, okay, am I going to do the play to overthrow him or will he give it to me and John can still be around, you know?
Yeah. But then John reacts and very Ned Stark style proceeds to choke a man. and you know, he says, touch my sister and I'll kill you myself. And then
he should have finished him right then and there.
Yeah, I think a lot. I mean, I would have not liked Littlefinger.
I know they need the men, but you leave him down there. Who's going to know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's not like Littlefinger inspires loyalty because he's just the Lord Protector of the Vale. He's not, you know, the Lord of it. If he dies, it's not a big deal. Lord Royce can easily take over, and you know, because look, the kid, you know, that's actually the Lord. You know, he's not gonna last long anyway because he's always a sickly kid,
right?
But anyway, so it cuts to Arya again on her trip north, and you see her at a campfire, just kind of resting, and her horse starts to get restless. And once again, like another thing I kind of wanted to see this season, it was a return of Nymeria, which is her direwolf, because we're surrounded by wolves, and then Nymeria shows up, and you're like, yeah! Because she let her go in season 1 when she was afraid Joffrey was going to kill her, because she killed, you know, a lady and everything else, and which is an interesting thing. And like, and my first initial thought was, you know, Nymeria is not going to go with Arya because it just costs too much for the studio to reproduce a huge direwolf in CGI every episode. But what was interesting was the other throwback to this season. This one was the one that a lot of people got confused with and didn't understand, was that as Nymeria walks off, Arya says, that's not you.
Yep.
Because basically she was saying no to her. And this echoes back as well to season 1. When Arya said this to Ned, because Ned was saying like, "Oh, you're gonna grow up to be marry a high lord and have tons of children," and she says, "No, that's not me," and it makes total sense because there's such a connection between the direwolves and the human counterpart. Is that Nymeria is just like Arya; she's a loner. She doesn't want to be a follower or be confined to being a pet.
Yep.
And so, and it's a convenient way for them not to make the CGI dog.
But it also, it makes sense. Like, if it's been in the wild and stuff like that, it doesn't make sense for it to just, okay, I'm going to be a domesticated direwolf now.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. It was a sad scene, though.
Yeah, because I think everybody wanted that, you know, everybody
how
wanted
about,
that.
How about at least a hug?
Yeah, but I'm sure we'll see Nymeria again at some point.
Oh, I think so. he'll pop up and save Arya's life.
Mm-hmm.
It's cliche, but that's going to happen.
And then the last scene of the episode starts off with Ilaria San and Yara Greyjoy on their way to King's Landing with the fleet. Oh, not King's Landing, I'm sorry, down to Dorne. And they're doing some heavy flirting, some heavy petting, drinking, and making out in front of Theon, because everyone loves to make out in front of your brother.
Just to frustrate him.
Yeah, why not? And then, the Sand Snakes are down there having fun about who they're going to murder, because everyone loves to talk about murder. And
I do it at least once a week.
Every day, especially at Comic-Con when you're in lines. And then suddenly they're under attack, because you got to love that armada of ships that you just happen to not notice when they just ram into you. Like, oh.
Well, when you're too busy doing other things.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, who is in the crow's nest right now? I mean, someone needs to be fired. Just saying.
It was me.
They got fired, literally. So
I said iceberg straight ahead, but no one listened.
Oh, that's what it was, wasn't it? It was the Himalayan rock salt.
Exactly.
Didn't have it turned on. but it turns out it's Euron Greyjoy here to fulfill his promise for his gift. And he just jumps on board and starts hacking people right and left. He's foaming at the mouth, just trying to kill people.
Well, we find out what his present's going to be.
We do find out what his present's going to be. And then two Sand Snakes, Nim and Obara, I never say her name right, and they team up against Euron, and they both meet a gruesome death, ironically, dying each by their own signature weapons that they've been training with since birth. But I kind of find it weird that they died after being trained so well, but okay.
Well, that guy got stabbed, I feel like, a billion times, or it was getting...
It wasn't like they weren't killing. They were outnumbered.
Well, I just meant like by Euron. Like, it's like, oh, they were each all fighting. They might have been tired, but it's like, oh, I didn't think Euron was that good, but okay. I don't know. I guess I was just rooting for the Sand Snakes, but that's not the way the plot is supposed to go. And then Yara finally sees Euron, and they start fighting, and she becomes overpowered, and was only left with Theon to save her. Hmm. And Theon actually, because he had been killing as well, he'd actually been fighting and been his old self.
He did look like he looked pretty good. Theon's back.
Theon was back, but there's a little bit of this I'll leave for the what happens in the book stays in the books. But but as you see there. What turns him back into Reek is the fact that he's looking around and he's seeing all the crew members cutting out tongues.
Yeah.
And that's what made him flashback to Ramsay Bolton, of like, these people are being mutilated. Yeah. And that's what it was. And then Euron refers to him as, having no penis. So it's like, it's all triggering. It's all triggering things. And so instead of saving his sister, he decides to return to Reek, and he jumps overboard into the water, leaving Yara and Ilaria as hostages for Euron.
I saw a lot of people on social network bashing Theon, but again,
thoughts on the regression. Did it make sense? Was it too much? Or like thoughts here?
It made total sense to me. I mean, naturally you don't want that to happen. You want Theon to be Theon, and you want him to try to save his sister, but that's, he's not the same person. He has post-traumatic stress, he's lost fingers and toes and his member, and, it's like he's never going to be the same guy.
Yeah,
and I think to me it was realistic.
Yeah.
Especially since, his uncle brought it up. To me, if he would have been the hero there, I'd been like, oh, that's great scene, great television, but is it really true to the story? No.
Well,
in that setting, it wouldn't have been true to the story. I mean, the storytelling.
Go ahead.
The people criticizing the show maybe taking just, you know, easy shortcuts to kind of have these, you know, satisfying answers or whatever. It did seem to get back into the being more depressing with the close of this episode, which is very in tune with the core of George R. R. Martin's story, where, you know, when people make mistakes or get careless, you know, bad things happen to them, which it seemed to be with this scene, closing scene to the episode.
It was it was depressing, but it made me, I can't wait for next Sunday. I mean, it wasn't like, oh, this is depressing, I hated it. No, I liked it. I want to see what's going to happen next. That's just me, personally.
Oh, yeah. And it's even sad when you realize they only have 5 more episodes left. You're like, oh, yeah. It's been a whole another year or two for the next season.
Year or two?
Well, I know they had said that it might come out in 2019 instead of 18.
2019? What are we doing? What are we doing here, people?
It could just be a rumor, but it's hopefully not.
Oh, that's brutal.
Well, then they better get the spinoff one going here before that.
But yeah, so we find out what Euron's gift is. He removed the Ironborn as a threat to Cersei. He removed the Dornish threat, and as well, he's delivering Ilaria Sand, the murderer of Cersei's daughter, to her. So it's a pretty big gift.
Yeah, for sure.
I have no problem with Cersei killing her.
Well, do we think Cersei is now going to marry what's his name?
I think she has to.
Yeah. It's a pretty big gift. It's like the Hope Diamond.
But I thought she just threw it into the water in the end, in the ocean. that is the episode. We do have one phone call from Maggie, so let's jump into that right now.
Listener feedback.
Hey, Jay, Jack, and Nick. This is Maggie from Northern Virginia. I'm just calling in after watching episode 2 of season 7 of Game of Thrones. Is this Stormborn? Or I think that was the title. I don't remember now. But it was a pretty good episode. The wolves and Arya were really cool. It's kind of sad that Nymeria didn't come back with her, but made sense. I'm also very excited that Arya is going north. I was kind of afraid she was going to go south, but I am rooting for the 4 Starks, well, the 3 Starks and Jon Snow to all be together at some point before this show ends. That is something I'm rooting for. So, and then my question for Nick was that, where is Ghost? We were wondering that in the room and none of us could remember. So it's my question for Nick. Where's Ghost? Where did Ghost go? Jon's direwolf for everybody else. So thanks guys. I will talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right, Maggie, thank you for the call. So Nick, where is Ghost?
He has been sentenced to CGI prison. Well, of course, you know, now we're not with the books, so that's it's not really possible to know. I know that he would be put in a pen a lot when he was at the wall to keep him away from men and the possible threat of him killing other people. But now that he's in Winterfell, that's a good question, really. He could just be chilling in maybe Jon Snow's room. But, I mean, the logical reasoning is just that he's too... Oh, that's right. No, because Jon... Yeah. Because we haven't seen him in a while. Anyway, I guess in the show, anyway.
Well, last we saw him was the Battle of the Bastards, right?
Okay, that's right. He was at the Battle of the Bastards. Okay, so I wasn't sure if they had... Okay, so yeah, so I guess he's just hanging out at Winterfell and they just don't want to put him in because it costs money and they put one direwolf in, so we're good. You know?
They can't afford 2 direwolves. I mean, they have those dragons to do, so...
Yeah. So.
They'll probably have to kill the dragons just to save the CGI cost.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't narrow it down to 1. Come on.
Yeah.
But, I'm sure we'll see... Who knows? I mean, that would be cool. Like, what if Jon brings Ghost down to Dragonstone? I would like that. Just like him, just like intimidation, just there.
Yeah, but like, again, like he has a dog. She has a dragon. Like 3 of them.
I know. So.
3. Oh, I like your little doggy.
How about a hot dog?
Hot dog.
Yeah,
it's pretty bad. We both thought at the same time.
Yeah.
We saw Jon Snow leave, and he wasn't leaving with Ghost. No. The Ghost wasn't there.
Right, I guess that's the bummer. Will Arya run into Jon Snow as he's going south?
No.
He'll probably. The thing is that most likely John, he's going down to White Harbor, so it's possible.
He's probably already there.
I mean, you know, the show does stuff differently than the books geographically, but he really shouldn't run into her. But it's possible. It depends on where they're at.
Well, what happens when she gets there? He's not there, and Sansa's there. What kind of is it? A hug? Is it a you?
Yeah.
You made it.
Yeah, they don't get along very well. That's
of
true.
All the Starks, you're still alive.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean Sansa and Arya are polar opposites of kids, right. But it's been a while.
Even though they are BFFs in real life.
Yeah, but I mean her and but Arya and Jon though are really close.
Right.
So I mean it's fair. I mean I think it would be a nice reunion if they do happen to see each other. But would Arya continue to go north, or would she join Jon?
Will one of them die before they see each other?
No, of course not. I would mutiny if Arya died.
Well, you said everyone's going to die but Sam.
No, I didn't say everyone's going to die but Sam.
I think you said that.
I would like it if most people died, for sure.
I think we go back and check the tapes. I'm pretty sure you said you think everyone's going to die but Sam.
It's the muscle relaxers talking.
All right, well, let's go to the closing segment of our podcast. What happens in the book stays in the book, which also includes some of Nick's better theories. So, take it away.
I don't have a whole lot. So, just to tell you the one book fact, which is neat, is that you guys might not have noticed this, you never heard any of Euron's soldiers talking or making any noise during the last battle. Because even when they come down and Ilaria Sand's like, kill us, get us over with, he just shakes his head. And that's it. You don't hear them make any noise whatsoever. It's because Euron's ship is called the Silence. And what he does is that whenever he defeats another ship or armada, he cuts the tongues out of all the sailors, so they can't mutiny. So basically, they can't talk with each other, so they just obey him.
Ah, okay.
It's just a neat little fact. It's just one of those things that escapes someone.
But they got to have some form of sign language in this universe, right?
That's true, but that's just how it works. Yeah.
Or they can just write down.
I'm doubting they can write.
That's true.
The thought struck me also, just thinking about Sam, was that we already talked about how the procedure, I don't think it was going to work. But also, what's going to become of his father's sword that he has it now? If he does cure Jorah, will he give it to Jorah? Because it is Valyrian steel, which kills White Walkers. You know, it's a really rare blade. So that's what I'm curious, because Sam has no need for it because he's not a fighter. So would the sword come into play with healing Jorah, or will he give it to him later to like defend Khaleesi? I just thought it was a neat theory. That
wouldn't you be upset with Sam if you went through all that, you know, carving, and after it didn't work? Yeah, give me that sword real quick, Sam.
You got to try.
Yeah, that was a painful procedure, though.
Yeah, it's true. But I mean, like I said, like it could slow it down. It might work a little bit. But I just don't think ultimately he will be cured by this procedure right now.
Okay. I did have one question.
Sure.
We can all answer. Who is going to save Theon?
Theon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's gonna save him?
Theon. I think it has to be Theon.
Yeah, he's just out there floating in the water, so you kind of wonder, like, is he going to be taken prisoner in the next episode?
I don't think he'll become prisoner. I think someone has to scoop him
to save him. Good idea, Jack. It's got to be, if you're thinking the way I'm just thinking, it's got to be Robert's bastard.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a couple people say that, and I was thinking of that, but it has to be, he's going to be saved.
Yeah.
Because what was the point of him jumping in the water just to drown?
His story isn't done yet.
No. So who's going to save him? Unless he floats to shore. I don't know how far offshore they were. But No, it'd be interesting to find out.
I think you nailed it, Jack. I think it's probably your best crackpot theory.
Well, it wasn't mine. I kind of stole it, but
like all of the best of Jack's crackpot theories are stolen.
Yeah. Well, okay, and then we talked about this a little bit at Comic-Con, guys. I kind of don't want it to happen, but you know, with the wall, the Hound saw White Walkers or the undead at a watch by the sea, and he didn't say that the wall was down. He just said walking around it or walking through it. And if you guys have noticed, I don't know if everyone out there is listening, the credits now are changed. If you look at anything season 1 through season 5-6, when they zoom out from the wall, the Shivering Sea, which is to the east of the wall, it's between an island. It's always been blue, but now it's frozen over with ice. And so the White Walkers might not even destroy the wall. They might just walk around it. And that's like one of the leading theories right now. I think it would be kind of lame, to tell you the truth. It's like, oh, they just walked around it. But it makes sense.
At first I was with you on that one because we were talking about it. But then I said, you know, winter is here. It would make sense that it would freeze. So
I'm not. Think they would have, like, when they made the wall however many years ago, they would have thought about that weakness in their plan of the wall?
Oh, you could go back to Star Wars, A New Hope.
But they made a kind of a prequel movie to explain why there was that weird weakness.
Winter is coming. I mean, it's just,
yeah, but with Star Wars, it's space wizards. Okay. He shot a torpedo in an exhaust port. An exhaust shoots out, you know, and it sucked in. It went down a narrow tube all the way down.
Not when you use the force, things change.
No one told the engineer about space wizards.
I think everyone makes mistakes. I mean, look at all the time. Engineers who do fantastic work, sometimes they just, oops, made a mistake. Maybe there was cost-cutting things back there. Maybe they go, oh, all right, we could go a little further with it. But no, it's, come on. How far you said it? How far across you say it goes, Nick?
The wall? 300 miles.
It's 300 miles. That's a long way.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to build it 400 miles?
Yeah.
All the way
out.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know, just because, like, it's like, why have a wall at all if they're just going to walk around it? It's like, okay. My great-great-grandfather died on that thing for nothing.
It happens.
Do you have any other crackpot theories, Jack?
I don't, no.
Okay. Well, the one thing I thought of, which I don't know why this did not occur to me until now, was just, like, I thought it was interesting. It's like, what's the end game? Like, what's going to happen in next season? Like, because if you think about it, now there's no Lord. Well, the Lord of Dorne is now captured. But she's not even really the Lord of Dorne. The only one in the Reach is only the Queen of Thorns, who's old and has no person to inherit. Lannisters are pretty much dead off because Jaime and Cersei are the only two left. The Vale. You have the kid who's most likely going to die. And then the North, you have Sansa. Huh. And there's no Baratheons left. So there's really no high-born lords anymore unless you appointed them. So it's like, what's going to happen if, let's just say, Jon and Dany end up getting married and everyone gets the PG, like, oh, they made it, ending. or, you know, what if Jon and Dany both die? You know, and then there's no ruling lords. It's like, is it going to be a democracy? Or I just think it's interesting if, like, there's no true powerful family left.
With all the fighting that goes on, I don't see it any way it could be a democracy.
Yeah.
It's still kind of years from anything like that existing.
Yeah. But still, even so, these people live to kill.
Well, who creates a new dynasty? You know, is it a new? Maybe it's Gilly.
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 Mm-hmm. know.
And Little Gilly.
Well, I mean, like Bravos is not a, you know, it's kind of a democracy, even though it's not. It's like a free city where free thought is allowed and all this. And so it's possible within this world.
So, you'd have like you're saying, you'd have to kill off all the main
which people. They pretty much are. Because, I mean, you think about it, like, Alara Sand's the only one left from Dorne. She's now prisoner. And then the Queen of Thorns isn't prisoner yet, but she has no heirs. There's no Baratheons left. And like I said, Jaime and Cersei aren't going to have any more kids. There's no, I mean, there's other Lannisters, I would assume.
Well, there is a Baratheon left.
Yeah. But he is a bastard.
But they've talked about giving bastards names back. I mean, Jon Snow can, you know, get his whatever back. He can be the King of the North.
King of the North!
We'll see. Yeah. But I just thought it was interesting, the fact that there's no, because like the Riverlands aren't really a kingdom. And that's the only family that's still kind of standing, other than the Starks. So, I don't know. It's not really a crackpot theory. It's just a thought.
I like the thought.
Well, thanks, Jack.
I'm here to back you up, because I know Jay wasn't going to do it.
Wow, that's messed up. All right. Well, that will do it for this week's show. Again, sorry I was a little bit late, but we were partying it up in San Diego for Comic-Con, and it was a lot of fun. Did a little viewing party, as we talked about, so thank you, everybody, that came to that. And if you'd like to come...
Watching it with more than, you know, usually I just watch it by myself, it's more enjoyable watching it with other people.
It is. It is fun. I know there's a lot of viewing parties and stuff like that happen. The past few years, until this year, we would do the premiere at our kind of podcast get-together weekend, which has been fun. But watching it with a group of people is fun. But there was that article that came out about discussing, you know, a lot of people prefer to watch it in dead silence. That is not how we watched it this past weekend.
No. People were making comments and... Of course, I got irritated by it, but that's okay.
Oh, sure.
Because I was quiet.
But give us a call at 385-309-0311.
Call anytime. So that's
385-309-0311. Call anytime with the questions, comments, and/or theories. Send an email to gameofthronespodcast@gmail.com. Once again, it's gameofthronespodcast@gmail.com. And join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/JandJackGroup. Become a patron at jandjack.com. Click on the Become a Patron link today. Also, if you shop on Amazon, there's a very passive way to help fund the Jay and Jack Productions fold. Go to jandjack.com/Amazon. Maybe you need to buy that recent release of Game of Thrones on Blu-ray. We'll do it there at jandjack.com/Amazon. And a small percentage of that sale will go to our production crew. All right, that is it.
Also, if you are a patron, we're doing the Ramblecast After Dark episode this Friday night at 9 p.m. It's the non-PG version of the show, and it'll be released to everybody out there probably Saturday or Sunday. But anyway, if you are a patron, you should be getting an email telling you how to join us on the show.
Boom.
That's all I got. But, you know, I'm thinking about, on the Amazon thing, I'm thinking about getting that greaseless fryer. I think I'm going to do it.
You should. I think it was Jana was telling me she has one.
They're pretty.
Air fryer.
I just thought it was my mom's kooky, crazy gadget thing. I go, yeah, these will be good. And they were really good.
Well, there you go.
Cool.
There you go. All right. Anything else, gentlemen, before we close out?
Do we have any other patrons we want to thank?
Oh, of course. Tack from Tokyo, Eckhart Richter, Molly the Millennial, and Ed the Mailman. Or mail person,
thanks.
I should say.
It's mail person.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Oh, actually, it's mail carrier now.
Mail carrier, okay.
They're that like ravens. Sense.
Not as fast except, as those ravens, though, unfortunately. I'm sorry.
Except the ravens never lose anything.
Yeah, that they're faster and they don't lose anything. Sorry, Ed.
Just kidding, Ed. You're just kidding.
All right, guys, that will do it. We'll see you next time. Hasta luego, and goodbye.
Bye. What'd you say?
Valar Morghulis.
All right.
Right.